This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT Knoxville. It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock, and I'm your host, Matt Schaefer-Powell. In 2010, conservative evangelist R. Albert Mohler wrote, quote, "Concern for the environment is one of the most controversial issues facing Christians today." He goes on to describe this particular dilemma. Environmentalism is often rooted in pantheistic spirituality, this idea that the universe is God and God is the universe. That's a concept often at odds with the basic tenets of Christianity. On the other hand, he writes, Christians, quote, "face a painful legacy of silence, apathy, and unconcern when it comes to taking care of the environment." That kind of clarion call for conservative Christians to embrace environmental stewardship has been gaining traction over the past decade or so, but there are plenty of doubters, and some of the dilemmas still exist. What exactly does man's dominion over every living thing mean? How does an evangelical Christian balance science, religion, and politics? Our guest today on Dialogue is a passionate observer of this movement. Dr. Cheryl Johns is a pastor and professor at the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in Cleveland, Tennessee. Cheryl Johns, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, before we get going too far, I want to talk a little bit about nomenclature, what we're calling things, I guess, over the next hour. As a listener, you're going to hear terms like evangelical and conservative Christian. First of all, let's start with this. Dr. Johns, what is an evangelical Christian? What does that term mean?
It's a very broad term and may have different meanings in different parts of the world. In the U.S. in particular, I think it coalesces around the tenets of faith that you would see in the National Association of Evangelicals, a personal born-again experience with Jesus Christ, a high view of Scripture. Mm-hmm. Those sort of are the main hallmarks. And so you have evangelicals, evangelical denominations, evangelical groups, evangelical members of mainline churches who are not evangelical. So it's a very broad term, and it can have many different meanings. Like in Latin America, for instance, an evangelical may be just someone who is Protestant, who is not Roman Catholic.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah. And then we'll also be talking about conservative Christianity. What's the tie-in there with evangelicals, maybe mostly here in the United States? Are most evangelicals considered conservative Christians?
I think that it used to be a synonym. To be mm-hmm. conservative would be evangelical. Now you're seeing more of those who would be socially or politically not conservative, who would consider themselves to be an evangelical. So they would be religiously conservative, socially and politically more on the left. And so it's getting more difficult. But for the most part, I think evangelicals see themselves as conservative politically, socially, religiously.
And I think you just touched on that, because there's also the word conservative, which can mean a lot of different things.
It can.
There's a religious kind of conservatism, mm-hmm. and there's a political kind of conservatism.
Yes.
And we sometimes group those together and say, well, if you're religiously conservative, then you must be politically conservative, not necessarily vice versa, but there is sort of that. And that's not necessarily the case.
That's not necessarily the case. And I believe in the polarization that we've had in the last decade or so in our society, it's becoming more difficult to say that you're an evangelical, but that you may not be socially or politically conservative. Mm-hmm. It's just assumed that you would be. But for the most part, evangelicalism does not necessarily mean that you are conservative.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we open the show with the Albert Mohler quote, "Concern for the environment is one of the most controversial issues facing Christians today." Now, this was actually written 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, first of all, if you think that was true 5 years ago, and then if so, is it still true that it's one of the most controversial issues facing Christians today?
I think it's controversial, but I'm always shocked when I hear that statement, mm-hmm. because I don't understand why it's controversial.
Okay. Can you elaborate on that?
It's as if, to me, it's just part and parcel of being a Christian, that the creation, sometimes we use those terms, As evangelical environmentalists, we call it, we use the environment, or we may say the creation.
Mm-hmm.
That
I know creation care is one of the terms that
you may hear used. So that to be see it as a controversial issue, I'm puzzled by that. I don't understand what is controversial about it, unless they mean some of the more political laws that may be out there. I'm not sure.
But there are, from a theological standpoint, there are ideas and beliefs that may come in conflict with the idea of, let's just jump ahead. I was going to ask you about mm-hmm. this later, but let's talk about the eschatological, the end times kind of view mm-hmm. of the world, that, well, this is kind of God's doing, mm-hmm. and it's God's decision to make about what happens with this earth. It really doesn't have anything to do with us. And that's still out there, isn't it, that idea?
It is. It's sort of what I would call a bad apocalyptic, one that has a sort of a fatalistic view. Mm-hmm. And also one that is somewhat anti-material, almost a Gnosticism, that the only things that really matter are the so-called spiritual realm, and the only thing that matters in people's lives are their souls. Mm-hmm. We save their souls. And that the earth is going to burn one day, and therefore God is causing all of the... If there is global warming, then it must be the hand of God. And the trite Facebook phrase, God is in control, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's just a very poor eschatological understanding of the world and God, and a bad apocalyptic in the sense that it does not understand that the creation is that which God designed from the very beginning to be our home, our place where we live, and that we're held to be stewards of that creation, that we're trustees over the creation.
Mm-hmm.
I think human beings, we are of the dust, we are part of the creation. And I think that bad apocalyptic does this. It separates human beings, and then on the other hand, you have the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a part of, I think, a commodification that we're all inherited in the Western world, where the world is an object and we're over it, rather than the sense that we are part of the creation. We're simultaneously human beings are part of creation and stewards of creation.
Well, you know, I have to think that some of those notions come from not only the beginning of the Bible in the book of Genesis, but also the end of the Bible, the book of Revelations. Let's talk a little bit about those interpretations in the book of Genesis. How has Genesis informed environmental attitudes within the Christian world, both in good and bad ways?
Perhaps not understanding the sense of Genesis as a narrative of the gift of creation and the human role in that, to serve and protect, to have dominion, has been mistranslated in some ways. And I think
when you say mistranslated, you mean mm-hmm. we're talking about language translation.
Yes.
We're not just talking about you're saying
right.
when it was actually translated from one language to another.
Yes, yeah. So that you do get words in Genesis of to serve and to protect. Mm-hmm. And there is a stewardship for a flourishing of that creation. Adam and Eve in the story there are given a sense of care of that rather than a sense of lordship over. And we read that, though, through the eyes of the modern Western human being as we are over creation, and the earth is just natural resources that we take for our own. So the whole commodification of the world and we're, you know, we're just to take what is ours.
Well, let me address what a lot of folks would kind of look on as the omnipotence of God. If God is omnipotent, isn't it up to God to determine what happens to the earth? And that really, it's as humans, it's not really our we don't really have a dog in the fight, I guess.
Yeah. No, I do believe God is sovereign, but I think one of the marks of being human is the free will. Mm-hmm. And so if we are going to have drastic global climate change and horrible events in the future, I would say that God is allowing us to have the consequences of our own behavior. Mm-hmm. Not that God would not redeem those, and I do have a sense that in the end, the creation will be redeemed. But that doesn't mean that we will not suffer from our destruction of the earth.
I want to take a step back. You've mentioned a couple times the Western world and historical. Mm-hmm. I want to give it a little historical context. Now, I'm talking about this connection between Christianity and environmental stewardship as if it's a brand new concept that was mm-hmm. just broken out of the box 10 years ago. It certainly has picked up a lot of steam here in the United States in the last 10 years, but my guess is that it's much older than that, that this idea of being a Christian and being an environmentalist or concerned about the environment are not mutually exclusive. And that idea has been around for a much longer time.
Oh, it has. And it has been around in church history and the Eastern Church Fathers, who had a very robust understanding of the Spirit at work in creation. And Al Mohler's statement that you used at the beginning of the program, you know, he says that some of the concern for the environment is out of a misguided pantheism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would say to him that the lack of concern for the environment comes from a misguided pneumatology or a misguided understanding of the Spirit of God in the world. So that pantheism would see that spirits inhabit things mm-hmm. and right. and so therefore you worship these items of the world, trees and rocks and stones mm-hmm. and sun. But an understanding that the Spirit of God holds all things together and created all things and sustains all things is not pantheism, but a real understanding that the spiritual and the material are not so disjointed mm-hmm. and that God's Spirit still inhabits the created order. It's not like God created the world and then left, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of evangelicals see that God created the world and then gave us the Bible without a real sense that God's Spirit is present, continuing in the world, holding all things together, recreating, making new, moving us into that time of the fulfillment of all things.
To extrapolate maybe a little bit more, and maybe I'm reading into what Dr. Mohler was saying, because I've seen it addressed by a lot of other conservative Christians, there was a bit of a reticence to kind of get close to this tree-hugging kind of mentality mm-hmm. that goes along with that we all sort of see as a stereotype of environmentalism. Do you think, first of all, that that might be what he was talking about? And also, is that something that has been a hurdle for a lot of congregations to clear?
It could be. And I sense, you know, I'm a tree-hugger. I grew up in the rural South. Mm-hmm. You know, I was outside more than inside. My mother told me right before she died, she said, I could never get you down from trees. I lived in trees. So I trees are...
You literally had to hug them so you didn't fall out of them, right?
Yes. So to be a tree hugger, I have a T-shirt that says I'm a tree hugger.
Yeah.
But to mainstream environmental concern in evangelicalism, I realized that you have to maybe move beyond some of the tree-hugging language, mm-hmm. so to speak, mm-hmm. Into language that evangelicals understand more, which is the language of stewardship, the language of caring for creation. Our bodies are part of the creation. And I often say to people, so if you believe that the earth is going to burn anyway, so let's just take from it what we will, it's synonymous with saying, you know, my body is going to die and decay anyway, so I will eat what I will take drugs, I will abuse my body because my body is not, you know, it's going to burn in the end.
It's going to die anyway, so why take care of it?
Because, you know, the world is inhabited not only by us, but by all creatures. And then also, we're one of the first generations that we don't see ourselves living for our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren. So I live now not for myself, but my life is in stewardship for my great-grandchildren. And therefore, a sense of not caring for the earth would say then I don't care for my own children or great-grandchildren. And James Hansen, NASA's, who did the first real research on global climate change and went before Congress in the late 1980s, you know, his latest book, Storms of My Grandchildren, he said, you know, I'm compelled to write this book because of the world that I am afraid my grandchildren will inherit.
Well, we are going to take a real quick break here on Dialogue. Cheryl Johns is a pastor and professor at the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in Cleveland, Tennessee. We're talking about evangelicals and the environment. If you have a question or some insight you'd like to share, you can tweet us at WUOTFM. You can send us a Facebook message, or you can do it the old-fashioned way. Just call us up, 974-5050. That's 974-5050. And this is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Matt Schaefer-Powell, back with my guest, Cheryl Johns of the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in nearby Cleveland, Tennessee. We're discussing the movement toward environmental stewardship among some of the nation's more conservative Christian communities. If you have questions or comments, you can catch us on Twitter, Facebook, or by calling us at 974-5050. That's 974-5050. And during the break, Dr. Johns, we were talking about how Earth Day got started, and this might surprise a lot of people.
It does. It surprised me when I first read about this, but we celebrate Earth Day here in the States, assuming that it began with Senator Gaylord Nelson in the U.S. I think it was in 1970, where he began what he called the Environmental Teach-In Day. But he was influenced by, and before him, a man by the name of John McConnell proposed the International Earth Day. He was attending a UNESCO conference on the environment in 1969. And so in 1970, he proposed an International Earth Day that would be on the equinox of March 2021.
Okay.
And many countries today still see that as the real Earth Day. He was the son and grandson of Pentecostal ministers and was a peace activist and saw his life as being an extension of what he would say a Pentecostal spirituality of peace.
Would he have called himself a Pentecostal?
I think he did.
Yeah.
But he became somewhat of an eclectic individual. He lived he died in this past October, the age of 97. He and Margaret Mead became close friends, and they worked together on things. So he had a wide range of people that he worked with.
Interesting. 974-5050, 974-5050 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment. And Nathan is calling from Oak Ridge. Nathan, welcome to Dialogue.
I have really enjoyed some of your shows over the past few years. Very thoughtful, very courageous that you look in a little deeper into some of these issues.
Well, thank you.
I'm not sure what the overall point that the young lady is making is about, because she seems to be letting on that she's either nervous or really doesn't like evangelicals, because she's saying, using words like misguided, and that they take what they will, and that they're not caring for their grandchildren. And I take objection to the stereotyping.
Well, let's thank you very much. Thank you for the call, Nathan.
And
I'm sorry, I just cut Nathan off just as he was about to make another point. But yeah, let's address this a little bit. I mean, we have addressed this to a certain extent. There is stereotyping, and it's difficult to have a conversation with, and this is not a cop-out, but it's difficult to have a conversation about any sort of movement without stereotyping some. But I also think that Nathan might have missed what you were talking about when you were talking about people not caring about their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. You weren't mm-hmm. saying evangelicals don't care about their grandchildren, not at all. And another point, you yourself are an evangelical.
Yes, I'm an evangelical, but I'm a Pentecostal, so sometimes an easy evangelical in that sense.
which is also distributes or exhibits rather what we're talking about in the difficulty of trying to find mm-hmm. names
yes.
for all these different thoughts and things
and
like that.
And to categorize. And I do think that we care for our grandchildren, but often we make life decisions when we buy things or the way we live and the way we consume, perhaps the consumer world that we live in, is that we are not understanding the need to maybe curb our appetite today so that our children and our grandchildren may have more. Mm-hmm. And curbing our appetite of fossil fuels, of produce of the earth, of just the way we consume, so that we want to leave our children in a world that does not have a 2 degree Fahrenheit increase in temperature.
Right.
Or high seas, or more difficulty finding food.
And something else that a point I guess I would want to make to Nathan as well is that where nobody is saying that anybody who has ever been an evangelical or conservative Christian by virtue of that you automatically disregard the environment. But from an institutional standpoint, hasn't that been the case for several years? And that's why it was, I don't want to say shocking, but it was very different 10 years ago when you started seeing Christian evangelical organizations coming forward to their membership and saying, listen, we need to look at this. This needs to be something we seriously consider.
Yes, and I've been encouraged in the last 10 years. There are many evangelicals taking leadership in stewardship of the environment. You have those who have worked for decades. Cal DeWitt, who started the Evangelical Environmental Network, has done just relentless work in this area as an evangelical. Jim Ball, he started the whole What Would Jesus Drive campaign that mm-hmm. we had many years ago. Richard Cizik of the NAE also was one of the pioneers in working in this area. So we have for years had evangelical initiatives, evangelical coalitions, evangelical statements on the care of creation for the health of the nation was one of the best statements on global health and care of creation. That was an evangelical statement that came out of the National Association of Evangelicals. So evangelicals have been doing wonderful work in this area, often maybe without people knowing about it or caring about it.
Let's go back to the phones. 974-5050. 974-5050 is the number to call. Louise is calling from Knoxville. Louise, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you. I have a quotation from Hubert Reeves, who is a French-Canadian astrophysicist.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's appropriate to this great conversation. It says, man is the most insane species. He worships an invisible God and destroys a visible nature, unaware that this nature he's destroying is this God he's worshiping.
Huh. That's an interesting quote. Louise, Cheryl, how do you respond to that?
I think it's such an irony, isn't it? But we have a way of separating this invisible God from the visible creation. And I believe that, especially in the incarnation of Jesus, that Paul says Jesus was the firstborn of creation. So you had this invisible God becoming flesh. And Jesus' redemption for me is not just the salvation of my soul so I can get a ticket to heaven or anything like that. It is a sense that Jesus' incarnation took in his body the most ancient dust of 4 billion years of light, stardust or whatever, and he redeemed all creation so that this invisible God became visible so that all creation might be brought into its healing. Salvation, Howard Snyder, a theologian in the Methodist tradition, says, you know, salvation is the healing of creation, not just the saving of our souls, but the healing of creation. And Jesus is the sign of that healing. And as a Pentecostal, I believe the Feast of Pentecost came on the Feast of Weeks, which is a harvest festival. Mm-hmm. And it is a way, I believe, of saying that the Spirit is descending upon flesh and the material world so that they coalesce in almost like a Mobius band. So that when I say that I am filled with the Spirit of God, I am a sign of all creation one day being filled with the Spirit. So I live eschatologically, that I am a sign of the new creation. I am a sign of that which is coming and the redemption of all things. T.S. Eliot, in his poem, Four Quartets, in the Pentecost section there, talks about when the fire and the rose are one. And that's how I blend my eschatology, is that, yeah, there may be some burning of something in the end, and we see that in the apocalypse. But there is a sense there of not burning to destroy, but burning to restore and renew and make all things new, and a flourishing of creation so that creation itself might be brought into a newness there.
974-5050, 974-5050 is the number to call if you have a question. We've got a lot of questions coming our way today. Let's go to Tim, who's calling from Knoxville. Tim, welcome to Dialogue. I'm sorry, I just called up the wrong call. There's Tim. Tim, are you there?
I am here. Thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate you.
You bet. Do you have a question?
I just wanted to say God bless you, Cheryl, for what you're doing today, because it's very rare that you hear a Christian perspective on this topic. And, you know, me, I've been a Christian my whole life, and I care very deeply about the environment. One of my reasons for living in this part of the country is the natural beauty that we enjoy, the waterways and the mountains and everything else. And it breaks my heart to see, you know, depleting air quality, depleting water quality. And on top of that, you know, that our faith being represented by people who want to, you know, build giant pipelines and pump more CO2 and toxins into the air and water, it's really at odds with what Christ tells us and what we are really supposed to be doing as Christian people, which is taking care of ourselves and each other and our environment and you know, everything else. So thank you for, you know, all of the things you're saying and really putting that word out.
Thank you very much, Tim. Appreciate the call.
Sure.
You know, it makes me think of something that when I was reading, I was actually watching a Bill Moyers documentary that was produced in 2006, and it was talking about how brave it was of some of these the ministers in these conservative evangelical congregations to go up into the pulpit and start talking about care of the environment. And I'm wondering if first of all, 10 years ago, was that a brave thing to do? And is it now? I mean, would you use the term brave?
Perhaps in certain pulpits, in certain places, it may be brave. I think of Joel Hunter, who was one of the first leading sort of mega church pastors in the Northland Church in Florida, who went into the pulpit and was soundly criticized by many conservatives for his stand on the environment. Joel has worked tirelessly in this effort. His church, his local church, has sponsored initiatives, conferences on the environment. So there are those pastors who care and who will find that the pulpit is a place where they feel compelled to speak about the creation and God's love for the creation and how we should also love, serve, protect the creation.
974-5050, 974-5050. Let's go to Brad, who's calling from Maryville, Tennessee. Brad, welcome to Dialogue.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call. How are you all doing today?
Doing just fine. Thank you.
Very good, very good. It's kind of a two-part question. How would you regard yourself politically, and how willing are you, and do you think other evangelical conservatives are to perhaps yield certain beliefs and ideas that you guys may have historically carried in order to pursue legislation more favorable to promoting a long-term climate solution, so to speak? Thank you very much, and thanks again for coming on, and have a great day, guys.
It's a great question,
thanks,
Brad, and it actually ties into some questions that I was going to ask as well, because ultimately we can speak of this in spiritual terms, we can speak of it in community terms, but ultimately it comes to a certain point where an evangelical Christian may be going to the voting booth.
Yes.
And that in itself might create some dilemmas. What if I vote for this person who's who has the same kind of views of the environment as I do, but also I don't necessarily agree with this person on gay marriage or abortion or something like that?
That's a dilemma, I believe, Brad. That was a very good question that you have there. For many of us who are evangelicals, we just don't know where to put ourselves politically, and it all things sometimes boil down to politics, because the care of creation has to go into laws and legislative decisions. And I heard that the House this past week just made some decisions that I consider very poor decisions regarding who can advise the EPA. And so, you know, you stand in the voting booth, and I consider myself pro-life. That abortion should be very, very rare and only in different circumstances. So as a pro-life evangelical, you know, I may stand in the voting booth and not know where to put my vote, because I believe in certain things that maybe a Democrat candidate would have in terms of other issues like health care or the environment. But on the other hand, I may oppose other things. And so I voted for Lamar Alexander in the last midterm elections because I love his stance on caring for the mountains of Tennessee and trying to keep at bay mountaintop removal. And so I look at things like that and try to make the best choice. So, you know, sometimes I've had friends. You know, I was a friend of Chuck Colson, and I used to say, it was a dear friend, and I would say, you know, I believe that Chuck is a genuine Christian, evangelical Christian, but he really is a Republican, you know. And the question is, are we Republicans who happen to be Christian, or are we Democrats who happen to be Christian, or are we Christians who happen to be? And so I think it our main hermeneutical lens with which we have the world, so that we're not defining ourselves as Republican is synonymous with evangelical, or Democrat is synonymous with whatever.
Right. So. And on a certain level, I mean, it's probably almost unfair of me to frame that as a uniquely evangelical Christian dilemma. A lot of us, anyone who who goes into the voting booth and is thinking things through, is going to run into that sort of, well, I like this person on this, but boy, I'm not comfortable with that. And that's something. Well, great. Thank you. We're going to take a little real quick break here on Dialogue. Cheryl Johns is a pastor. By the way, Emoja, I see you on hold, and I hope to talk to you right after the break. Cheryl Johns is a pastor and professor at the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in Cleveland, Tennessee. We're talking today about evangelicals and the environment. If you have a question or some insight, just call us, tweet us, send us a Facebook message. The number to call us is 974-5050, 974-5050. And this is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Matt Schaefer-Powell, back with my guest, Cheryl Johns of the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in nearby Cleveland, Tennessee. We're discussing the movement toward environmental stewardship among some of the nation's more conservative evangelical Christian communities. If you have a question or comments, you can catch us on Twitter, on Facebook, or by calling us at 974-5050. And we're going to go to our friend Emoja, who is waiting right here on Dialogue. Emoja, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing just fine, Emoja. Welcome to Dialogue.
Great, thank you. Dr. Johns, the subject matter, I appreciate you broaching the subject matter. I want to maybe make it a little more simple, at least for myself. It may be, for other people, it may be even, you know, simple when we talk about climate control and greenhouse gas and all the rest, but our organization started recycling about 25 years ago, and what I'm interested in is seeing whether or not there is an interfaith movement with your particular spiritual past to actually bring together various people of faith to simply start recycling. And I say that based on the fact that in my 25 years of doing recycling, we started in public housing. The complexities of some of these other subject matters overshadow, at least to me, the simple fact that we as citizens in the city of Knoxville, the state of Tennessee, and the world, each of us every day produces about 3 pounds of refuse, 3 to 4 pounds of refuse. And in that refuse, almost 80% or greater is recyclable, but we throw it into the landfill. So what we've determined with our organization is that a commitment to do anything, solar energy, solar panels, whatever it is an individual commitment. And what we found out is the first individual commitment is that when you have a plastic container and you're drinking out of it, if your mind and your hand are coordinated where you say, this is not trash, this is a recycled piece of material, I am going to recycle it. So once again, my question is, I've listened to the dialogue, and I really appreciate it. However, I'm more result-oriented. Is there a movement from your particular spiritual path to unite other people to actually go forward on this? And I end with this. Dr. Sally Bingham came to Knoxville about 10 years ago, and I don't even remember what her particular path was, but I know she's on spiritual path. Her statement was that the faith community, the communities of faith, should be as involved in the environmental movement as we have been in the civil rights movement and the human rights movement. And so I suggest that we actually move forward collectively and maybe do some recycling to make that path maybe a little more simpler for all of us.
Okay, Emoja.
Thank you for your work, and may God continue to reward and bless you.
Emoja, thanks so much for the call. And he brings up a good point.
He does.
And I'm gonna add on to that a little bit because this certainly doesn't isn't restricted to conservative Christians, but there are a lot of congregations that are very insular, and they may do great work within their congregations. And again, this isn't even restricted to just Christianity. There are a lot of communities of faith that are very insular, and may not feel real comfortable sort of reaching out to other faiths, especially if they particularly believe that their faith is in the right and maybe some of these other faiths are not.
We have to reach beyond our own selves in terms of what we call the common good. And the common good is in many ways for the health of our lives and our children's lives. And Emoja, I really appreciate your remarks there. You know, I live down in Bradley County, and I often say it is very difficult to recycle in Bradley County. We have in Cleveland 2 recycling centers. One is open on Monday and Wednesday at certain hours. The other is open on Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday morning. And so I have to, we bag everything up. And right now, from Christmas and everything, our garage is a nightmare.
Right.
And so we'll either put it in my husband's truck or we'll just take it in several trips. And so if you want to recycle in Bradley County, you have to work at it. And I would love to see alliances formed to make it easier, simpler, curbside, things that many other communities have. And it's just simple things like that that over the long run can make a huge difference in the amount of trash and what we do. Just as you said, Emoja, just a plastic bottle of water, when we finish with it, where do we take it? Often, you know, I have a bag in my office under my desk that will get full, and then I have to take it to my car to take it to the recycling. So many times we don't join with other people in coalitions to do these simple grassroots things.
We're going to go to Colin's call in just a second, but I wanted to ask you, Dr. Johns, how the younger generations are affecting this conversation. I'm speaking, and I know, because as the father of a couple of millennials myself, I know they hate when people use that term to describe them, but I am talking about millennials. How has that generation affected this conversation within the evangelical community?
There's a wonderful group in the evangelical community called the Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. Ben Lowe is over that, and Ben is just a wonderful person. He writes, he goes to college campuses and speaks, he does grassroots, he's run for Congress, he's done wonderful things as a millennial, and he is, I think, representative of this millennial generation that is maybe more concerned than some older people might would be in the evangelical world. So I see people like Ben and others who are doing wonderful things for the environment.
Do you think that they're probably easier to convince to take this up than maybe their parents or their grandparents are?
It could be. It could be because they may see the effects of what we would call global climate change in their daily lives, or they read. They've been educated.
And plus they have access to different tools, and I realize this is an old person talking about millennials again, but truly there's a lot more information out there that they have access to that their parents and their grandparents did not have access to.
Right.
Colin's calling from Oak Ridge. Colin, welcome to Dialogue.
Thanks very much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You bet.
My question relates to a recent movement by some, I guess I'd call them advocacy groups, to put pressure on fossil fuel companies through divestment strategies. And several churches have put forth some ideas about divesting their pension funds and other investment tools from fossil fuel companies and other, I guess, environmentally ethically challenged companies that are out there. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the idea of divestment, particularly from a faith-based strategy of using investment as a tool for God's will.
It's a wonderful tool, and we can use it in, as you mentioned, certain denominations are looking at their retirement and pension funds. And also in the way we invest, not just divesting, but investing, can we invest in those companies that are more environmentally friendly? And it seems that we're beginning to understand that these companies can be profitable and also good for the environment, that it's not either or, that good business can be alternative forms of energy.
Now, how does this play out in communities? And I'm thinking of maybe some of the coal communities here in East Tennessee and the Appalachians, where the fight over the environment has always been framed as a fight over livelihood.
It is, and I feel acutely for people who live in communities where there are no job options except the coal companies. And then, you know, the whole issue of mountaintop removal is, to me, a very important issue because, again, it is you have people who are working for the coal companies and mountaintop removal. But once that mountain has been removed and the coal has been gone, the companies leave the communities and They are much worse off environmentally, economically. The streams have been polluted, and then the jobs are gone. And so in the long run, I believe that it again, is a, sometimes framed as a short-term survival versus long-term flourishing. And I hate that decision. And I feel for people who have to make that decision, because I don't think that it's a viable decision. I think that we should not have to choose between putting food on our table for our children today and then leaving a world that is beautiful for our grandchildren.
There, we were talking earlier about how difficult it can be, or how difficult it can be for a minister to step up into the pulpit and start to make this to a congregation that may have some preconceived notions about the environment, environmentalists, and that sort of thing. But it strikes me as particularly challenging in a community where a lot of the people that minister is speaking to might be working for the company that we're talking about, the coal company, for instance.
Yes, yeah. And I think that the coal companies are savvy and they understand how to court the favor of certain pastors, especially evangelical pastors, so that coal is you know, you can frame it in terms of coal is good for the future, without looking at the complexities of what it does in the environment, in the communities, in the water table, and the rise of certain forms of cancer and other things. So pastors who love their congregation are often, I believe, caught between even if they want to speak out on this, they see people every day whose lives are affected by this. So they live in this tension, and it would not be one that I would envy.
Is destruction of the environment a sin? Do you think it's a sin? Hmm. Would you call it a sin, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would. And sometimes we sin and we don't realize, you know, there are those things that we sin in thought and word and deed. And sometimes we sin without an awareness of that. And there are sins that are deeply personal, and then there are sins that have ripple effects into systems. And, you know, there are individual sins and there are systemic sins. Perhaps maybe a better word is evil. That I believe degradation of the environment is evil. Tolkien had an understanding of that as evil as marring the beauty of the earth. Mm-hmm. And all that which was created as beautiful becomes marred and disfigured through evil. And I see that as evil, as if salvation is healing of creation, then evil becomes the disfiguring of creation, the damaging of it, the brokenness of it. And how then do I participate? I can choose. I can choose to participate in the healing of creation. And I can be a vehicle of that healing for the shalom and the well-being and the beauty of the earth. Or I can participate in its degradation. And I believe that sometimes we make choices based upon what is most convenient for us right now, without being willing to sacrifice to say, you know, I need to not consume this or that, or I need to circumscribe my life in such a way that it is no longer one that would harm the environment. So sin, I'm not sure in the category of that. You know, there's a phrase in the book of Revelation that many evangelicals may overlook, which says, you know, the wrath of God has come to destroy those who have destroyed the earth. Hmm. So we don't often hear that preached in evangelical circles, but I read that the other day in my morning devotion, and it gave me pause.
We only have, unfortunately, about another minute and a half of the show, but I did want to ask you real quickly about this balance between science and religion, that we spend a lot of time talking about that, how our religious beliefs can come in conflict with science and scientific findings. How does an evangelical work through that?
was part of a group years ago of scientists and evangelicals. We had a private meeting. It's in 2000, I think it was in 2006, at the Malhanna Plantation in Georgia. Very private meeting that was called by Eric Shivian, who is director of the Center of Health and the Global Environment at Harvard, and Richard Cizik. And the scientists who showed up there terrified me because of their abilities, like E.O. Wilson, Paul Epstein, who worked with the IPCC of the United Nations and others. But what I found in that meeting is that we began to, I'm going to use a good Pentecostal word, testify mm-hmm. of our love for the creation. And what emerged was this consensus that they were people of science and we were people of faith. They were afraid of us for various reasons, and we were afraid of them. But we had a common love for the earth, its most precious thing. And we issued this, what we called, urgent call for the care of creation. And we can work with science. And if the science people will work with us, it's a great coalition of science and faith.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cheryl Johns, for taking the drive up from Cleveland, Tennessee today to be a guest on Dialogue. Thanks also to Greg Hill, who ran the board and handled the phones today. Thanks to my good friend, the Reverend Steve Martin, for his help in producing today's show. And thank you for listening, calling, and sending your questions. If you missed the show or you just want to hear it again, we should have it back up on our webpage in the next hour or so. Just go to WUOT.org. Dialogue is a production of 91.9 FM, WUOT Knoxville, WUOT HD1 Knoxville, and WUOT.org, a listener-supported service of the University of Tennessee.